You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, former U.S. Senator Gary Hart joins the show to talk about the threats he sees to American democracy and why he says rebirth of civic virtues can help. Now, millions of people a year are dealing with some level of hearing loss, but a lot of folks who might benefit from hearing aids don't have them. That might change some, however, as the switch in policy now allows people to purchase hearing aids over the counter. No prescription, no doctor's appointment. You'll be able to walk into your local store and buy one. But a little research can go a long way in making the right choice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use a hearing aid or is it someone close to you? If so, was it a difficult process to get one? Are you excited about maybe more accessibility here? If you're interested in getting some kind of hearing aid, does getting one over the counter better motivate you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Barbara Kelly is Executive Director of the Hearing Loss Association of America. Barbara, welcome to Central Time.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Nicholas Reed is an assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, specializing in the epidemiology of aging, including hearing loss and hearing in the healthcare system. Dr. Reed, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Barbara, let's start with you. How big a difference is this change from prescription only to available over-the-counter for hearing devices?
This is really big and important because this is another avenue to care. I mean, we still have the traditional model of care where people go to an audiologist or a hearing instrument specialist, but it's important to know that this pathway to getting a hearing aid is for adults only with self-perceived mild to moderate hearing loss.
Right. Why is that an important distinction to make? Who does that leave out?
Well, you know, sometimes people with mild to moderate hearing loss aren't really motivated to take that step to hearing aids. We know that sometimes when people find out they have a hearing loss, it often takes 5 to 7 years before they actually get hearing aids. And if this would motivate people to take that first step sooner rather than later, that's really good because hearing health is so important to overall health. And, you know, sometimes people with a mild loss don't necessarily want to wear hearing aids 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, but they might need some situational hearing, maybe around the conference table at work or a leisure activity or maybe in a restaurant. So this just creates another avenue to care, another consumer choice that might motivate people to try a hearing aid because they're more accessible, and we hope that they'll be more affordable.
And before we bring Dr. Reed in, I want to talk about that affordability. I'm seeing numbers going in here from $200 to $3,000 under the current system. Things like Medicare don't cover a huge amount of the cost of hearing aids. Do you think there's more that needs to be done when it comes to affordability?
Yes. Medicare does not cover the cost of hearing aids. Statutorily, when the law was signed into made a bill in 1965, it specifically excluded hearing aids. And I think, you know, back then, they just didn't know about how important it was to treat hearing health. You know, it was something older people had. And insurance typically doesn't cover hearing aids. Some Medicare Advantage plans do, but everybody doesn't have that, and those vary. So the affordability aspect is important. But it's important to remember that with a prescription hearing aid, now this is not over the counter, the cost of the device is about one-third of the cost, and the rest are the bundled-in services for fitting, testing, cleaning, adjustments. And that's important, too, for somebody with a more severe hearing loss or somebody who needs that type of assistant. But the over-the-counter model should be more affordable. Now, we're seeing price points, as of yesterday, anywhere from $200 up to $3,000. I don't know if Dr. Reed expected them to be that expensive, but I would say, and this is a guess, that what we see in the market today might not be how the market's going to shake out in a year or two. I mean, I think there's going to be innovation. That's what we hope for. An electronics company getting into this market and making these devices more affordable for people.
Now, Dr. Reed, let's talk about diagnosis. There's a lot of hearing loss in my family. I assume my day will come before too long. And often it takes a while. It's gradual. You don't realize overnight you have hearing loss for a lot of people. Can you talk about diagnosing it in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hearing loss does occur slow and insidious, you know, across the lifespan. So it takes years to set in, right? And it takes years to notice. And our brains do a really good job of noticing when there's a sudden change, but our brains are also great at ignoring, you know, the quotidian daily things, right? And because hearing loss sets in so slow, it's not, you know, something that we pick up on right away. We also tend to sort of attribute hearing loss to something else. You know, most people sort of fundamentally think of hearing loss as a volume issue, but it's really a volume issue only at a few specific frequencies. And so it ends up being a clarity issue. So when people say it sounds like others are mumbling, you know, that makes a lot of sense because you're hearing some sounds, but not others, which makes it sort of hard to pick up that you might have hearing loss. As far as getting a diagnosis, you know, right now the gold standard diagnosis is obviously seeing an audiologist, and they will run a full comprehensive test on you. I think it's also sort of important that concurrent to OTC hearing aids dropping, you know, we are seeing a few companies out there, particularly on the Apple iOS systems, that can do a screening via a smartphone that's pretty accurate. So we are starting to see some technologic innovations there that I think might allow people to sort of not necessarily diagnose, but screen for, you know, getting a good idea of where their hearing might stand.
I want to talk, Dr. Reed, to a specific audience here, people who might be aware of some hearing loss, but maybe it's not such a big deal. They don't want to go through your diagnosis and fitting and things like that. Well, now here's over the counter and they're thinking, okay, yeah, maybe. Where do they start? What questions should they be asking about the kind of thing they're going to end up buying?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that is the group that's probably most excited about this, right? They've thought about it. They recognize they may have some hearing loss and they just, you know, they haven't, for whatever reason, engaged with the current system, the current model. You know, when you're starting out, I think it's a good thing to remember that, you know, devices and professionals are not the same thing. A great thing about this bill is that it does sort of separate the device from the professional, and you can still see a professional right off the bat. So if you're having any doubts and you would like, you know, some help exploring this system, there's nothing wrong with starting that way and just doing a session with somebody to get an idea of what you could benefit from, where your hearing stands, what device options are out there. You know, if you do want to go it yourself, I do think it's a good idea to look for things like devices that are integrated with a smartphone so they can be customized. You know, the OTC hearing regs from the FDA didn't spell out, you know, that OTC devices have to be self-fitting, but they did leave a self-fitting category and label. And I think it's really important that you look for devices that do meet that self-fitting category and label, because those devices actually had to prove that somebody, a layperson, can grab that device and use it about as well, or at least no worse than, really, an audiologist or another professional. So that's a great thing to look for. Other thing, maybe when you're starting out in your research, look for trial periods. You know, now that we've separated the device from the professional, we sort of are in a Wild West category of trial periods and warranties that used to be mandated along with licensure for professionals. You know, it's great to see companies that back their product and give you some time to get used to devices.
We are talking about over-the-counter OTC hearing aids. They exist now, this week, after a change from the FDA. We're talking with Barbara Kelly, Executive Director of the Hearing Loss Association of America, and Dr. Nicholas Reed from the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question? Have you started to dig into what's on the market? Are you baffled by what's on the market? Do you have questions about hearing loss and hearing correction devices, hearing aids? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Hey, by the way, if you go to WPR.org/Central Time, we've got a link to a resource, actually a bunch of resources from the Hearing Loss Association of America that can help you hopefully figure things out if you need to. Find that at WPR.org/Central Time. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about hearing aids. As of this week, they're available without a prescription. Barbara Kelly is with us, Executive Director of the Hearing Loss Association of America, and Dr. Nicholas Reed, Assistant Professor at Johns Hopkins University's School of Medicine. You can join in with your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Bill joins us now in Eau Claire. Bill, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. They changed my life. I'm not familiar with, the over-the-counter, but we went for years needing them, but thinking, my God, I can't afford $5,000. Well, we found a, I don't know if I can mention the store or not, but
sure.
We found a place. Oh, I can mention it?
Sure, why not?
So we went to, we're in Eau Claire, we went to Costco, and I'm talking to you through my hearing aids right now. It's amazing. And I get phone calls and I can self-adjust and they changed my life, and it was $1,400, not $5,000. So I'm really glad that they're doing this, because for years, it saved my marriage, because everybody gets tired of saying what. So thank you so much. And I'll just had a comment.
So Bill, thank you so much for sharing that. And Barbara, Bill laughed when he said it, but he said it saved his marriage. This isn't just about hearing, right? People feel isolation. This can be a point of conflict in families.
It sure is. I mean, the way we communicate, the way we relate to people is through sound and is through conversation. And people, when it becomes hard to understand and hear, they start to withdraw. They don't want to go out because it's too exhausting and they're not going to be able to hear. And, you know, the miscommunications and the bluffing. And so people do isolate. And we saw through COVID that isolation leads to loneliness, and loneliness is now a health issue. So that really is, one of the comorbidities of hearing loss and the anxiety around that. And, your caller mentioned he went to Costco and got these hearing aids that saved his marriage. And I just want to note to the callers that he used the traditional prescription model. That would not have been an over-the-counter model that we're talking about. That's the other path to care. So I just want to make that clear. And with that model, he would have received services of a hearing instrument specialist. That's great to hear. We know hearing aids work. And I think Dr. Reed made the great example that it does take time to get used to a hearing aid, whether it's an over-the-counter or whether it's a prescription device, because your brain has to adapt. And all of a sudden you're getting, bombarded with all this amplification. So people should really look for those trial periods and the return policies on the box. Dr. Reed also mentioned a smartphone. That's important to look. Will you need something else? And while most of us are perfectly comfortable fiddling with apps and using smartphones, maybe if you're a senior, you're not, or maybe you don't have a smartphone. So that would be an important thing to note when you're buying an over-the-counter product.
Bill, thanks for the call. Go to another Bill, Bill in Ashland. Bill, hi.
Hi, I look for Bill from Ashland.
Go ahead,
that's
Bill.
Me. Okay. I have to deal with the statement by the gentleman just before me about having a professional audiologist prescription for your device when you go into a realtor to buy over-the-counter hearing aid, such a device. It is a very, very, very serious thing. When you get people that are deaf, as I am, I have purchased hearing aids twice from an audiologist, and what the thing about it that's very, very vital to us people who cannot hear is when we ran into a problem, we got someone to go to. We can't walk into a Walmart and say, okay, listen, I can't hear today. What can you do for me? Well, you know as well as anybody does that you're going to just either going to have to wait, or we'll check on it, or we read the warranty. They ain't going to give you a new set of hearing aids without some kind of a instructions from it.
Bill, thanks a lot for calling in. Dr. Reed, Bill dealing with more severe hearing loss. Is Bill's, and I imagine other people, a case where, probably you want to work with an audiologist?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about the severity of loss, it's important to remember that OTC devices aren't necessarily, they will have cutoff points and they won't be designed for those with more severe hearing losses. It's that mild to moderate category. And even when you get into the higher moderate levels, you know, you may start to think about going to the prescription category just based off of pure audibility amplification issues. The other thing, to Bill's point, is that the professional can provide, you know, some wonderful insights here. And I think it's important that we remember, you know, we use this language over the counter. And, you know, in our minds, that means that they're separate and there's no way they're together. But the truth is, they can still coexist and you can still see a professional with an OTC hearing aid. You know, part of the backing of why OTC is so important is because we ended up with a care model where only a few companies, five companies literally, dominate the entire marketplace. And it was hard for new companies to get involved because there were no pathways. They had to go through audiologists to then sell to consumers. Now we've opened that up. So new companies can get involved. We can see new technologies on the market. We can see different options and technology on the market. We can see changes in affordability and accessibility via market competition. The audiologists and the professionals can still exist in that model, and you can see both. So, you know, I think it's like when you're thinking about this, it's always important to just keep that in the back of your mind that just because you buy a hearing aid one way does not exclude a professional from being involved with you.
Bill, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. We're talking about over-the-counter hearing aids. They exist now. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences or questions. We've got Dr. Nicholas Reed from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, Barbara Kelly with the Hearing Loss Association of America. And back to your calls now. Richard is with us in Two Rivers. Richard, hi.
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have several questions. If I wanted to have specific functions that are Bluetooth to my phone or whatever, or to do away with high-pitched noises like dogs barking or stuff like that, is there a way to do that? And I'm just kidding, but if there's a way to block the wife out, there's a way to do that.
We don't want this to hinder your marriage, Richard, but thanks for the call. Barbara, can you talk about, you know, what kind of features, what kind of options are on the table now?
That's a really great question. That's a very common question. And I want to pitch that to Dr. Reed too, because I mean, the market just opened yesterday, and the FDA doesn't mandate that these devices have Bluetooth streaming or telecoils, but this is where, you know, we hope to see innovation. And I think Richard, the caller, probably does have the hearing aids that have that. But Dr. Reed, what can you talk to the models that are on the market now as far as streaming and connectivity?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, Barbara, it's weird to hear you call me Dr. Reed. We've known each other long. I'm just like, who is this person? No, Richard's question is phenomenal. You know, there's a lot of technology options out there, and the top of the line hearing aid models that we're used to, these prescription models, they have Bluetooth connectivity. They work with smartphones. They work with lots of connected devices to help in different situations, like remote microphones that, you know, someone else could wear on their lapel, for example. And then if you're in a crowded restaurant, you know, you only hear that person you want to hear. The OTC market is just starting. But we already do see some companies putting out devices that do work through phones, and they have that Bluetooth connectivity. In fact, several of them are fit and programmed that way and customized that way. And we see devices focusing on different frequency ranges. So, you know, when you hear questions about, like, I don't want to hear, you know, dogs barking or something. Well, you know, the devices can manipulate sound to a certain extent. Some of them can. But at the same time, I would just say from this professional standpoint, you may want to also consider that we want to give you sound at a full spectrum too. So we don't want to eliminate sounds just because they're sort of a nuisance, right? We want your brain to get used to hearing them. But that being said, some of the devices can do that. What's cool about the OTC market actually is that hearing aids are not a one-size-fits-all thing. And I think by introducing new companies into this space, we're going to see some cool technologic innovations that go in both directions. You know, higher tech, really cool things, you know, smartphone connectivity, But also, Barbara made this amazing point in the beginning. You know, there's room for low-tech devices that just overcome a very specific situation for people who want something that's really affordable just to get them over the hill in that one specific situation, like a meeting at work or, you know, going to a specific restaurant. And there's room for all of this in the marketplace. And in the current model, it's a lot harder to have those options on the table because it all goes through the professional. So now we sort of see like a democratization of technologies.
Thanks again for that call. Barbara, we just have a couple minutes left. I mentioned earlier, we've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time to your organization, the Hearing Loss Association of America, and a resource page about the various hearing devices. What kind of resources do you have up there that can help people make smart decisions?
At hearingloss.org/OTC, we have some tip sheets of who might be a candidate for an OTC or who might need to take that other path for prescription hearing aids. We have some signs to recognize who, you know, if you might have a hearing loss, and we have a shopping guide. And they're very simple, they're very straightforward, and we're going to keep developing these as the market develops.
And Dr. Reed, in just our last half a minute or so, what developments are you watching for? What are you hopeful for the future for people dealing with hearing loss?
Well, that's a great question. I'm hopeful, actually, for what I just sort of mentioned, that I do want to see some more low-tech options, actually, for, you know, just simple needs where someone doesn't have to break the bank just for one situation. So they get involved in hearing care a little bit earlier. I also am so excited to see what kind of shapes and sizes new companies come up with. You know, we've really been locked in some traditional designs, and I'm sort of excited to see, you know, hearing aids meet AirPods and what that looks like for consumers.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Reed, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Barbara, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Dr. Nicholas Reed, assistant professor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, specializing in hearing loss and hearing in the healthcare system, and Barbara Kelly, executive director of the Hearing Loss Association of America. The news, it's happening this week. Hearing aids, many of them are available over the counter, i.e. without a prescription. Again, we've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time to Barbara's organization and their resource page for people trying to figure out what kind of hearing aid might be right for you. You can also share your experiences over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, hear from a first responder in Kenosha who joins the show to talk about her efforts to help prevent suicide in the community and maybe some lessons learned for other communities around Wisconsin. Join in with your questions as well. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. It's a colder than usual week in Wisconsin for this time of year. Whether you like that or not, one bit of good news, mosquitoes are not biting us. Some of you are more relieved about that than others because it seems like there's always some people who mosquitoes like a lot, so they get bitten more. If you feel like that's you, it's not just you, and there's some science behind that. As reported in the Washington Post, researchers did a lab test to see who attracted more mosquitoes, and no, nobody had to get bit. They wrapped nylon stockings around people's arms to absorb some of their natural, you know, body chemistry. Then they had a contest to see which stockings attracted more mosquitoes. There were clear and consistent winners, people who had more carboxylic acid coming off their pores. That's a chemical that can create some common body odors, but mosquitoes are way more sensitive to it than humans. It's just one way that mosquitoes find us, but mosquitoes love this stuff. If you want to cut back on your carboxylic acid emissions, sorry, science isn't there yet. Could be a step in that direction, though. Mosquito news you can't use yet. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. After the January 6th insurrection, political watchers have become increasingly worried about threats to American democracy. That includes our next guest, who says he's worried about authoritarian trends in the U.S. In his new book, he argues the solution won't be found in more polarization. He says we need to go back to small R Republican values like popular sovereignty, the Commonwealth, and civic virtue. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do those ideas mean to you? If you feel disengaged from politics, what led you there? What in your mind is to blame for that? Do you think we need more civics education in our schools? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Gary Hart is a former Democratic U.S. Senator from Colorado. His new book is The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. Senator Hart, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to join you.
Senator Hart, how worried are you about the future of our republic?
I guess it depends on which newscast I listen to, but there are serious problems going on in our country, and we have to recognize them. And some of us are trying to figure out why the structure of our government, starting 250 years ago, leads to this dilemma or can solve it. And what I've been looking at, instead of just decrying the decline of democracy, is suggesting a way in which we can recover it. And it has to do with the dilemma our founders confronted 250 years ago between whether we are a republic or a democracy.
Some of those founders settled on the phrase a democratic republic. Can you help us understand what that means? How are we a democracy and republic at the same time?
They had this problem themselves, among themselves, in drafting the U.S. Constitution in Philadelphia. And it turns out the Northerners, particularly Hamilton, John Adams, and a few others, wanted us to declare ourselves simply a democracy. And the Virginians, led by Thomas Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe that followed, wanted us to be a democracy, but also a republic. And they resolved the matter by Jefferson himself declaring in the debate, we are a democratic republic. Now, to make this make any sense to your very knowledgeable listeners, let's begin with the idea that in 4,400 BC, Rome, the Romans declared themselves a republic. About the same time, 400 BC, the Greeks declared themselves a democracy. It turns out the central theme of both systems was the same. And it's two words, popular sovereignty. No autocrat, no king, no single individual in charge of the politics. The people themselves govern. Now, that sounds pretty simple, but right now it's not operating that way. So that's point number one. Point number two is they both believed in what they quaintly called civic virtue. That is to say, each citizen in either a democracy or a republic had the responsibility to participate in the decisions affecting their lives. And this is what my long essay, short book, argues. What's missing in America in the 21st century is the sense of what they called civic virtue, and today we would call citizen duty or citizen responsibility.
We're talking to former Senator.
We have been through a century of rights.
We're talking to former Senator Gary Hart, author of the book, The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. Senator Hart, I'm sorry I talked over you there. How can we bring back that concept of civic virtue that you were just talking about?
Well, I grew up in a small town in eastern Kansas. And in the eighth grade, a required course was called civics. So I would think the first step is the public education system, giving to each student across this country the idea of what the Constitution is and what it says, what the party system says and how it works, and why we all have a duty to participate in the political process.
How do we reinvent that sense of duty, not just for the kids? I mean, civics classes can help do that, but we got a lot of grown-ups out there. How can we as citizens reclaim that sense of civic duty and civic virtue?
The first lesson is vote. We promote ourselves throughout the world as the leading democracy in the world. Follow us. 60 to 65% of free Americans do not vote, but the rest, a third of Americans, do not vote. So what is it we're selling to Asia and Africa and Latin America when we ourselves do not follow our own system? So vote. Second, follow the news. Don't just listen to Fox News on one side or NBC on the other. Listen to all sides, discuss with your neighbors, and make your own decisions. Don't let some hotshot in Fox News tell you how to vote. Make up your own minds. And then finally, as a family, talk to your children over the dinner table about what this country means and how they are going to need to protect it.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'd have to say money. The money's been poisoning politics since it's gotten in there. I think we've all seen the votes go towards, you know, special interest groups. So that's a big chunk of it, I think.
Tim, thanks for the call. Senator Hart, Tim worried about the influence of money in politics, and you are too. You write about that in your essay.
Give me 30 minutes to talk about that. When I first ran for the Senate, never having run for office before, in 1974, I had a contest for the Democratic nomination with six other Democrats. And then, having got the nomination to run against a two-term wealthy Republican incumbent, my entire campaign cost $375,000. My dear friend, Michael Bennett, one of the best senators in the Congress of the United States, reminds me a lot of Gaylord Nelson, is going to spend, as other candidates are, somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 million. The caller is absolutely right. Now, who benefits from that? I have to say it, and I can say it on public radio, the networks, the television and radio networks benefit from these tens and hundreds of millions of dollars spent on political advertising. This is a crime. It shouldn't happen.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Gary Hart, former Democratic U.S. Senator from Colorado, with us today to talk about his new book, The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about his concerns about money in politics? Are there changes you'd like to see? How about civics education getting more emphasis in our schools? Do you, when you look at the future of our Democratic Republic in this United States, do you feel hope, dread, a little of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with former U.S. Senator Gary Hart from Colorado about his new book, The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Kathleen is with us in Madison. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. My comment is that we don't seem to have a democracy. The people don't have a voice. I mean, we vote for a representative, but it seems like the parties are in control. If the representatives that we elect don't vote the way they want, the party wants them to, there are consequences. For example, Liz Cheney was stripped by the Republican Party of her responsibilities because she didn't vote the way they wanted her to.
Kathleen, thanks for the call, Senator Hart. Kathleen says the parties have too much power. The voters get left out.
Well, can I offer the simple answer, which is, I think Will Rogers, Democratic Party, is not an organized party. It is a whole bunch of individuals. So I think the Democratic Party offers much less domination of its candidates than its opponents. Now, the control, in following up on the previous call, has to do with money. So wealthy contributors, corporations included, thanks to the Supreme Court, call up, have a middle level executive call up the Democratic Party and say, we want good relations with your party. Who should we contribute to? So that goes on. It goes on to a higher level in the other party. It's much more organized, much more focused on specific issues and specific votes. But that's a separate issue to discuss.
Thanks for the call, Kathleen. Louis joins us now in Ocado. Louis, hello.
Yes, Mr. Hart, thank you for the program and being a guest. What I'd like to say, and if you have any comments, is that I think we also need to teach critical thinking in the school, starting in the elementary and going on up through high school and college, if you go that far. And also, I think that the voters should punish the party that is putting out disingenuous ads, that you can see that ad doesn't make sense, whether it be gas prices that are held on the world stage or inflation and that thing, which is a world problem. So I hope people get out and vote to show their support for the candidate that has the truthful message.
Louis, thanks for the call. A couple of things there, Senator Hart. First of all, Louis says we need more focus in schools and elsewhere on critical thinking and evaluating truth and falsehood.
Well, why earlier discussed education in the public schools about civics, not politics, civics, meaning what it means to be a citizen in a democracy, a democratic democracy. But the caller is exactly right.
Louis, thanks for the call. Louis also says we don't really have a system, or he hopes voters will punish candidates who make misleading ads and misleading claims. Does that happen, or do we just pick a side these days, Senator Hart?
No, there's a lot of, I mean, there's so much going on in the both commercial and the public networks about who voted which way, that there is more than enough information to provide voters in Wisconsin or Colorado or anywhere else what their elected officials are doing or what their candidates are proposing. So if there's an enemy here, and I don't think it's an enemy, it is social media, which has fallen in the hands of highly partisan organizations that devote their listeners and viewers to their agenda. And we've got to get out of that. We've got individual Americans are smart enough, intelligent enough to make their own decisions. Don't vote the way Fox News tells you, or for that matter, MSNBC. Find the facts, find the information, and don't just tune in 5 minutes to your favorite channel.
We're talking to Senator Gary Hart. Longtime Senator Gary Hart, his new book is The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. Senator Hart, you mentioned the Roman Republic, the Greek democracies. Rome ended up with an emperor. Many of those Greek democratic city-states ended up with autocrats. What is it that people living in popular sovereignty governments see appealing about a single leader, an authoritarian leader? Why do they want that sometimes?
The central question is participation. The more Americans participate, not just in national politics, but state politics and local politics, the more they gain control over powerful interests, heavily financed powerful interests. So I can't stress enough the need to participate and the duty, let me underscore, duty to participate. The more American people let others make their decisions for them, the more this country is going to be in trouble.
Time for one more caller. Jim is with us in Madison. Jim, hello.
Hi. Now, what you were just saying about participation, we can participate in choosing from the menu, but I believe we have to have more transparency on what happens backstage in making up the menu.
Jim, thanks for the call. Jim wants to see more transparency from our politicians, Senator Hart, I think while they're running and maybe while they're serving in office.
Well, I'm not quite sure how to respond, but there has been more, quote, scrutiny of politicians than ever before, but it has been much more partisan. Fox News scrutinizing Democrats, trash them. Maybe NBC, I don't know, scrutinize right-wing Republicans. Maybe it's their reports are factual, and I believe they are. But it's up to individuals to know. The point is, there is so much more information now than ever before. And as it places an increasing obligation on individual voters in Wisconsin and Colorado to find out how much what they're learning is true and not true. There is a volume of falsehoods being propagated to the American people every day. And it means that duties of being a citizen are even more important.
Senator Hart, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Gary Hart, former Democratic U.S. Senator from Colorado. He was with us today to talk about his new book. It's called The American Republic Can Save American Democracy. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll look at we'll continue our series of conversations about big issues in the midterm elections with a look at the economy and inflation. How are candidates talking about it? What policy options do they actually have if elected to tackle inflation at the state or national level on, as one of our callers mentioned earlier, a big international issue? We'll ask you to join in with your thoughts and whether or not it's influencing your vote. You can get us started right now with your thoughts on inflation in the midterm campaign. Email ideas@WPR.org. Also tomorrow, a walk in the park could be a chance for a fresh snack. Check out a food forest program in Wisconsin. It aims to bring fruit trees and other produce to parks for visitors to eat for free. And once upon a time, late night TV talk shows were the talk of the workplace the next morning. They're still out there, but things have changed a lot. We'll look at the past, present, and future of the late night talk show. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.